1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. It is yet another edition of Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And our first guest today is Kayla Montgomery. Kayla, the Vice President of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood New Hampshire Action Fund, and has been with the organization now for over 5 years. Planned Parenthood New Hampshire Action Fund is an independent, nonpartisan, not-for-profit organization formed as the advocacy and political arm of Planned Parenthood of Northern New England in New Hampshire. The Action Fund engages in educational and electoral activity, including grassroots organizing and legislative advocacy. And Kayla Montgomery, we welcome you to Feldis and Kale.
Thanks for having me.
Kayla, thanks so much for being on. You have a long history of advocating for so many wonderful issues, including a full range of reproductive health care here in the state of New Hampshire, full funding of other health care services. There's been a long history of bipartisan support, both on the issue of choice and support for Planned Parenthood, including in the last budget when Democrats in the majority, I served as majority leader, we bolstered funding for local community health centers. However, in this budget, something has gone a little off kilter here, and that long bipartisan tradition has been broken. What is going on in this budget in terms of the funding for these needed services?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. It's true. The New Hampshire's Family Planning Program has had a very long history of bipartisan support. The program actually began under Nixon in the 70s. New Hampshire's been a part of it since 1972. Besides a couple of hiccups early in the 2011, basically there has been always been bipartisan support for this program. So it's really shameful and extremely disappointing to see that the program has been gutted by the majority of the House members. And we're really, really hopeful that the Senate will understand the importance of this program and move to fix it, move to get rid of the language that defunds reproductive health centers and moves to properly fund it. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We're recovering from the pandemic, and we should be focused on making sure that there's more access to health care, not less. So very hopeful that things are going to change in the coming weeks.
Well, certainly taking away health care can, in a pandemic, and especially for people who have been taking it on the chin in the pandemic, disproportionately women, disproportionately low-income folks, that's the people that are served. What is the justification for this, Kayla? Has there been any enunciated justification that makes any sense?
No, there has not been. I think that there are some budget writers in the House who maybe just didn't understand the full ramifications of what they have done. And it's extremely, like I said, it's extremely disappointing. It's extremely shameful. I don't think that they realized what this amendment, which is now part of the budget, so it's not really an amendment anymore, what it does. And it creates such barriers and such hostility that there's nothing that we can do besides pull out of the program. And I think that they knew that. I think that there's such a desire to defund abortion providers that they're willing to take down the entire program. And I just want to be very clear that there are no state or federal dollars that ever go to fund abortion care. So there are lots of systems in place. The federal money through Title X and the state money through the Family Planning Program do not pay for abortion care. When a patient comes in and they need abortion, they either self-pay or they pay with their private insurance. I think that's bad policy, but that's not the issue that's up today. So I think people need to really understand that there already is no state funds that go to abortion care. So what this does is they're saying that money is fungible, and that is just not true. And so in their sort of zealousness to take to defund abortion in New Hampshire, they're taking down a program that provides quality, affordable health care to our most marginalized citizens.
And can you talk a little bit about some of the health care services that, that Planned Parenthood provides to, as you put it, our, some of our most marginalized citizens?
Sure. So the Title X program, family planning program, has always gone to preventative care, birth control, STI testing and treatment, cancer screening. A lot of people don't know this, but we are in the middle of an STI outbreak. Both gonorrhea and syphilis are in outbreak status. And because of the pandemic, it's been more difficult for people to find testing and treatment. And Planned Parenthood has, over the last few months, really come up with some innovative ways to have better access to people, including mail-in STI testing, which has been really groundbreaking in the fact that you don't have to go to, you know, you don't have to go to a health center in order to get the care that you need. So we've been doing so much, and it takes a lot of the load off of frontline workers who can focus on COVID relief. So Planned Parenthood just provides a tremendous amount of preventative care. We also provide things like hormone replacement therapy at all of our health centers, at our 22 health centers across the region. We are also a resource. We're a soft handoff to a lot of different needs, whether it, you know, if someone comes in and they have a need that can't be met at Planned Parenthood, we have a good network of, we can provide a soft handoff to someone who can help. And for many people that come into a Planned Parenthood, it's the only care that they receive all year. They might come in, they might have a well person exam, they might get a LARC insertion. LARC insertions are a big service that we provide. LARCs are long-acting reversible contraception, like an IUD, something that has been really tremendous in reducing unintended pregnancy because it is the quote-unquote set-it-and-forget-it method. You can get one inserted, and sometimes they last for 6, 7, 8 years. Really a game changer when it comes to birth control, but it is a specialized service. It is something that Planned Parenthood has supply, and they have the people that can do the insertions and the removals. Whereas, you know, it's, and sometimes you can get that same day, whereas you can't just walk into a hospital and get that done, or walk into a federally qualified health center and get that done. So really important specialized services that people rely on, and their basic preventative care.
You know, most of us, especially men, have never had any direct dealings with Planned Parenthood. We hear about Planned Parenthood, and I think there are a lot of preconceived notions by people who have never dealt with Planned Parenthood about, you know, what the services are, which you just mentioned. So what are some of the, Kayla, the misconceptions that many people have about Planned Parenthood?
Well, you know, I think the first thing that's important to note is that we see men all the time. I think it was 12% of our, 12-13% last year of patients were men. So anyone can come in. You can, you know, if you have a, if you need a physical for a, for a sports team, you can come in. We in Vermont, and Planned Parenthood Northern New England is Vermont, Maine, and New Hampshire, but there's vasectomy care at a couple places in Vermont. So there are plenty of we serve anyone who needs us, and so certainly men can go to a Planned Parenthood. It's not just about birth control. And I think another, you know, something that people will say frequently is that we only provide abortion care, and abortion is a important part of services that Planned Parenthood provides. It's a very small part of services. The vast, vast majority of services that are done at Planned Parenthood are contraception and STI testing and treatment, counseling. So, you know, abortion is, it varies, but usually it's between like 6 and 7% of what we do. And that, again, that changes, but it's a small but important piece of what we do.
Yeah, but I think, you know, a lot of people have that misconception that it's, you know, 98% abortion. You know, I mean, really, people who have never dealt with Planned Parenthood or know much about it or have had any personal, you know, dealings with Planned Parenthood, that I think, you know, that's the notion out there, I think, Kayla, don't you think?
I mean, if you've never had any dealings with Planned Parenthood and you really don't know what you're, you know, talking about, I think that's the notion that most people have, or, you know, that have never had any direct contact with Planned Parenthood.
Sure. Well, I think it's important to ask the people in your life who have been, because the truth is one in five people in this country have been to a Planned Parenthood, and that's a lot of people. So it's very clear that we're not just, we don't just specialize in one certain thing. We offer whole health care for anyone who needs it.
And myself, Ken, have received health care services at Planned Parenthood in New Hampshire.
There you go.
And, you know, this particular issue in the budget, Kayla, again, long-standing bipartisan tradition of supporting Planned Parenthood and supporting, by the way, the funding for the STI treatment and prevention programming services, both of which in jeopardy in the budget. And the budget's now in the state Senate. State Senate, traditionally, my former colleagues there have had a longstanding, also bipartisan support of Planned Parenthood. And for folks who are listening and are concerned about this effort to defund Planned Parenthood, what should they do to have their voice heard?
Well, first of all, Dan, I want to just be clear. It's not just the defunding of Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
We are the largest provider. We see the most patients. But this has really wide-ranging effects. This also would defund the Concord Equality Health Center, which is right here in our community, and the Joan G. Levering Health Center, which is out in Greenland. And it also prevents some federally qualified health centers from contracting with Planned Parenthood, because federally qualified health centers, like I just mentioned, there's some things that they can't do when it comes to specialized reproductive care, like an IUD insertion, so they contract out. So this has very wide-ranging effects. I think some of the budget writers or some of the folks in the House who worked specifically on putting this in, they were targeting Planned Parenthood, as you can imagine, but it is not just Planned Parenthood that's affected.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I do want to be clear about that, but I think if folks want to be involved, and they should, because public health is important. It's just an important part of healthy communities. They need to reach out to their senators and don't wait, and reach out to the governor too, because he has a lot of say in this as well. And folks need to know that that as we recover from a pandemic, we should really be focusing on expanding access to care. And this really flies in the face of our bipartisan New Hampshire traditions, but also just of public health and healthy communities.
And of course, it's not just the efforts in the budget that are being debated in terms of the full range of health care and reproductive health care services. There are a couple pieces of legislation that the House passed that are now in the state Senate. Can you give us an update on those, and what are the ramifications of those if they're passed and signed into law?
Sure. So there are two bills that have made it over to the Senate, House Bill 625 and House Bill 233. And they are both cruel. They're cruel and dangerous bills. House Bill 625 is a ban on abortion later in pregnancy at 24 weeks. And it has very, very narrow exceptions, including none for the health of the fetus. And it's really just critical that people remember that there is no one-size-fits-all pregnancy. There's no, anyone who's been pregnant more than one time recognizes that a pregnancy feels different and is different every time. And any doctor can tell you that as well. And so because of these narrow exceptions, we're creating a space where we now have lawmakers who are making these, who are dictating these very personal decisions, personal private decisions, and they should be left to the family and the provider and nobody else. Because, as someone who's experienced multiple pregnancies, I don't want lawmakers making decisions over what happens. I want to be talking to my family and talking to my doctor and being in charge of those decisions. And freedom for reproductive health is really a shared value that we have in New Hampshire. And this passage of that bill would take that away. And then the other bill, House Bill 233, it is something that it is so cruel, and it It affects grieving families, and this is a bill that has been pushed in multiple states. This is not something that people just came up with in New Hampshire. It's being pushed by people who want to end safe legal abortion in our country. However, this bill actually has nothing to do with abortion, because what it does is it says that people, families in these really devastating situations involving a fatal fetal diagnosis or early labor, it would prevent them from being able to hold their newborns for their final moments, because it would say that it would dictate the care that doctors will provide, because it would force them to hook them up to machines that unfortunately might not work. And this is just another example of lawmakers attempting to get in the way of these really personal, private healthcare decisions. And so many providers came out against this bill because dictating what they can and can't do, particularly in these very personal and tragic moments, is, it's pretty shocking to them. And also, both of these bills criminalize doctors for doing their jobs and for making decisions in consultation with families. And it criminalizes them, both of them, for up to 7 years. And we really can't be, New Hampshire should not be in the practice of criminalizing providers, period. But also we know that healthcare specialists are in high demand, and we can't be creating a state that's so hostile that it threatens to send doctors to jail for 7 years just for doing their jobs.
Well,
and so those two bills are in the Senate Judiciary Committee right now, and they're awaiting a vote in the committee, and then they'll go to the floor.
Got it. And Kayla, I just don't get it. I mean, look, I'm personally staunchly pro-choice, and people have different views. However, using a national template and applying it in New Hampshire and personal private medical decisions, why is the legislature pursuing all this stuff when there's key issues, bread and butter issues on healthcare, on mental health, on where we need to address? And but instead, it seems like this legislature, specifically the House, is going down these pathways of kind of a one size fits all sort of approach that doesn't seem consistent with New Hampshire values. What is going on at the State House?
Your guess is as good as mine. It's disappointing. It's shameful. I don't think we can say it's everyone. I have faith that there are some. I know for a fact that there are some people who have stood up against their party and have, really recognize that privacy is important, particularly when it comes to these personal medical decisions, and they have stood up to their party, and I have faith that that will continue. But I don't know what's going on. I think that's a great question for House leadership.
Kayla Montgomery is our guest. She's the Vice President of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood New Hampshire Action Fund. We'll take a break. 103.9 1450 WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale is proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Our guest on this segment of the show is Kayla Montgomery, the Vice President of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood New Hampshire Action Fund. And Kayla, what about federal funding? Is there federal funding for Planned Parenthood?
That's a great question. So currently there is not federal funding for Planned Parenthood, because under the Trump administration back in 2018, the Trump administration put out a gag rule on providers who also perform abortion care. And so it is very similar to what's going on in the state. So we were defunded under the Trump administration. And fortunately, thanks to a bipartisan commitment from the House and the Senate, We were able to make up for that money in the Senate. In the state budget, and we were able to replace our lost federal dollars with state dollars in the last budget. So that was super helpful, and there was no interruptions to patient care thanks to state budget writers last year, or 2 years ago. But what has happened is that the Biden administration has fortunately rolled back the Trump administration's rules, and so we are now able to get back into the Title X program. And again, that's the program that we've been in since 1972. However, it's going to take a little bit of time, and so, logistically, these things are difficult, and so we probably will not see federal funding again until a year from now, until March or April of 2022. So what that means is we currently are defunded on a federal level, and if this budget goes through as is, we'll also be defunded on a state level. So that means there will be no funding from the state or federal government.
Did Kayla, I'm just curious about this at the federal. Did President Biden not act quickly enough to lift this?
No.
Or what happened?
No, he did that almost right away. Within the first, 15, 20 days, he lifted that rule. It's just that bureaucracy takes time, and there's appropriations, and there's all kinds of, different things. But he moved as fast as he could on this, for sure.
So, to me, it basically comes down to a Republican versus Democrat argument, right, about Planned Parenthood for the most part. It can be pretty much broken down along party lines, correct?
I disagree with you because I think that this is a nonpartisan issue, and I think that New Hampshire has always held that this is a nonpartisan issue, and we have seen lots of people from, lots of Republicans who support contracts and support the work that we do because they know that public health is an obligation for the state and that health equity is an important part of what the state needs to be focused on. And so I would not say it is bi-party. I think that it has been trending more in that direction, unfortunately, and in the House these last few weeks, it has been pretty clear that that there is not a lot of support from the Republican Party on Planned Parenthood, and it's unfortunate, but I would not call it, a split, because that, I think, diminishes the great work that folks from every party have done over the years.
And certainly the state Senate, and, there's, Senator Bradley and others who have historically been, fairly supportive and, approach this whole issue and public health and a pretty common sense mentality. What is the indication at this point from the state Senate about whether or not they're going to continue with these harmful provisions in the budget?
Well, I don't know because the Senate budget process is just getting going. And so it'll be interesting to see in the coming weeks. We know that the public health, maternal health division will be presenting to the Finance Committee soon. And so I think, it's just a little bit early on in the process. Like you mentioned, there has been, broad bipartisan support in the Senate over the last few years, and I hope that that continues.
And again, if folks want to reach out, they can reach out to the Senate Finance Committee. Kayla, just talk a little bit about the importance of people telling their stories to state senators and how much they listen to issues that people care about and that they care about for their families and their community.
Yeah, it's critical. It's absolutely critical because, a lobbyist can go up to a senator, to a representative, and, pitch why it's important. But it's not the same. It's not the same as a personal story. And personal stories are what change minds, they change hearts, they change narratives, because it's incredibly important that lawmakers understand that what they do in Concord and what they do in Washington affects real life families, real people. And your health care is so personal, and so they need to understand that the decisions that they're making affect people every day. And sometimes it can be incredibly painful. It can be hard to have these conversations because it is really personal. But it's important. And so anytime that anyone can sort of find their voice and make these phone calls, it's very brave, and it is something that we encourage. And we're always happy to talk to people about their stories. We're happy to help them kind of develop their stories a little bit, or happy to help them figure out the best places to let their voices be heard, because that's what we do. It's not about, you know, it's not about me. It's not about Kayla Montgomery. It's about the patients that we serve, and it's about the health of New Hampshire. And so whatever we can do to help people share their stories and make sure that their messages get to lawmakers is incredibly important. And so they can always call us first if they're nervous before calling a lawmaker, and we're always happy to sort of work and help that, and help, you know, make that connection.
And what, Kayla, what number would they reach you at, or email? What would be the best way to reach out?
So our email is grassrootsnh@ppnne.org.
grassrootsnh@ppnne.org. Got it.
Yeah, ppnne.org. Okay. Planned Parenthood Northern New England.
Very good. Kayla, thanks for being with us today on Feldis and Kale. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Kayla.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.
That is Kayla Montgomery, Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. And we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Amy Hall will be with us on the next edition of Feldis and Kale. And that will be coming up very shortly on a radio dial near you. Or you can catch past performances, as it were, on nhtalkradio.com. 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. It is Feldis and Kale, and we shall return right after these important messages. 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And we're happy to be joined now by Anne Marie Timmons, a New Hampshire native who covered state government, courts, and social justice issues for the Concord Monitor for 25 years. Anne Marie has studied journalism and all kinds of things during a Nieman Fellowship to Harvard, and she'll be covering health, business, and the state's changing demographics for the brand-new New Hampshire Bulletin. And Anne Marie Timmons, welcome to Feldis and Kale.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite to be here.
Well, it is our pleasure to have you, Anne Marie, and I've been checking out your online publication. It is terrific. So congratulations to you and everyone else who is making it possible.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. I know that you had an article today, as a matter of fact, one that's just out, talking about tourism rebounding in the state of New Hampshire.
I did. I was looking at, I'd been hearing sort of just anecdotally that hotels and restaurants were doing well. And so I looked back at our several. What I did is I went back and checked in with a lot of them. And I've actually looked at a lot of their social media and the interest in people from out of state saying, had a great time, felt so safe, loved coming up here. Got me thinking, like, what would people say? And so I was able to find some travelers, and they said, yeah, we looked around. We're in Mass. We looked around. We wanted to be able to drive, not fly. And New Hampshire was the most open, even when we did have the mask mandate. And so they felt very safe coming here. We're also sort of naturally set up for social distancing because we have such a wide open outdoors. So ski season was really strong. And then spring is always a little slow in New Hampshire, but is doing well. Summer was great. So it's very interesting. And yeah, rooms and meals taxes are down for sure from over last year. But if you look each month, that gap from what we had hoped to here and what we are is shrinking. Like, I think from $10 million at the start of the fiscal year down to $1 million last month. So there is a movement forward to travel hearing that the lifting of the mask mandate certainly is upsetting to some in the state. The other side sees that as a real boost for travel and tourism this summer.
And Anne-Marie, it is great to have you back reporting. And this is a new venture that is springing up and covering state news and state politics in those, I think, 22 states. Can you talk a little bit about this new venture that you're part of and what the goal of it is?
Yes. So we are part of a national nonprofit called State Newsroom. And as you said, we're in about 20 other states and we're expanding into more. And the idea is to go into a state that has capital reporting, but largely because of the budget with newsrooms being cut, that reporting has been diminished by not the quality of the journalism, but just newsrooms had to cut back. And so with our organization and the others around the country, state government, legislature, state agencies, translating that, what that means for people living in the state. So we will be focused on the legislature. I think we have the privilege, honestly, to be able to put three people on the legislature. You know, when I was at the Monitor, that was sort of standard. We had several people covering the state house, and that's just not possible anymore. So we hope to be able to add to the coverage in New Hampshire. You know, think of ourselves as competing with this media that is here, but being able to take a little bit different approach because we are able to take a couple days with the story, a few days with the story, and go a little deeper. So I think we'll be able to add to the conversation, educating folks on what is happening. So I hope that we aren't seen as trying to force people out, because really the last thing we want is less media in this state. And we are open, our no paywalls. Anyone can read our site, New Hampshire Bulletin, for free. And any publication that wants to run something we've done can do that for free as well.
That's certainly good news, no pun intended.
I think there was, but, you know.
For the state of New Hampshire and for public discourse and, you know, digging deep into these stories, Ken and I have talked about it, Anne-Marie, on the show, that oftentimes it's kind of like a, you know, he said, she said, and sometimes there's a false equivalency to it. And that's, you know, and that's not, no fault necessarily of the, you know, the media, because they have to churn out these stories. But your ability and your organization's ability to dig deep and to look at the facts and present what really happens, I think is helpful and supplements the existing news media and something that's needed for public policy discourse.
I agree, and I don't think there's a reporter in the state who wants to write those he said, she said stories. As you noted,
yeah.
It's people are capable of more, certainly want to do more. It's just time. So, for example, when I did my story today, I lead with a couple from Massachusetts. To find that couple, I had to go. It took almost a day. I had to go on to all the social media sites of the big hotels in the state, message each traveler who had come here, and finally found some that were willing to talk with me. So that can't be turned around on deadline, but that personal experience, I think, adds to a story. So that's every story that you wish you had more time. And, right, I think we're lucky to have that additional time.
And it's so true. You talk about the fact that the newsrooms are shrinking everywhere in this country, but, you know, we notice it more locally with fewer reporters, at the Concord Monitor, the Union Leader, other publications throughout the state. The fact that the Nashua Telegraph now publishes just once a week, and the rest of the time they're online. So we do certainly need something in the state where we can get, really unbiased and updated news on a regular basis with, some great behind the scenes, commentary as you had today in your piece. But that takes the digging and the time that these newspapers and, radio and TV outlets no longer have.
It's so true. And I think back to last week, we just launched last week. It feels like it was longer than that. But I had a story last week that looked at the, you know, the crisis of children waiting in emergency rooms. A lot of people have told that story, told it well. It needs to stay in the news, and I'm glad a lot of people are covering it. What I tried to do and was glad I was able to is to find parents who were willing to tell their story, you know, parents who had very different experiences, people on Medicaid, people with means to pay educational consultants in private hospitals. And regardless, they all have to begin at the emergency room. That's the only way into the system. And I think those personal stories really make a difference because I think of it like, you know, people like movies because they want to relate to characters and plots and situations. And I think anytime we can add that to our reporting, it's for the better. I think back to when I was at the Monitor, and gosh, we probably had 15 reporters, and we were always complaining, like, why are they starving us for resources? And I think today, you know, newsrooms are at a third of that or fewer. And I actually left the Monitor in 2014 because I did see, you know, the news world, the job of being a reporter had changed so much. I was having to turn around three things a day. I didn't feel great about any of them anymore. So I took a break, became a school counselor, did some freelance, and then this opportunity came back and came up, and I thought, this is what I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to do it in New Hampshire because I do feel like it's sort of the old-fashioned journalism that I was able to do for so long at the Monitor.
Well, it's certainly great, and, you know, one of the personal stories that you highlighted in terms of the mental health crisis in the state, particularly the children's mental health crisis in the state, where kids are waiting in emergency rooms for mental health treatment, sometimes sleeping in emergency rooms, was the family in Bow. Can you talk a little bit mm-hmm. about and share that story a little bit with listeners?
Yes, this was a family, husband and wife live in Bow. Both have professional jobs. Kids have always, you know, had what they needed. They are comfortable. Their son just had a mental health crisis that began when he was young. It kept getting worse. They did what people said, take him to the emergency room when it's a crisis. And it had become so awful for him and for them, he actually became worse while he was in the emergency room. Each time that they just became afraid of going there and dreading it. So one day they found him trying to hang himself in his bedroom closet, and their instinct and decision was not to go to the emergency room, to not call 911. They stayed with him in his room by his side all night to keep him safe and called his psychiatrist in the morning, and she called 911 and had him taken by ambulance to the state hospital, to the emergency room. From there, he went to the state hospital. And so they just felt like that is not best for our son. But again, it's the only way they were able to eventually get into treatment. And the path for them was to hire something called an educational consultant at a cost of $3,500, who is able to look around the country and say, these are all the treatment centers I know about. I think this one would be a good match for your son. So that place for them happened to be in Utah. He went there, spent several months. The family ended up spending almost $120,000 of their own money to get him treatment. And he's doing, it's up and down. It's not a cure. It never is. But he's doing better. He's home now. He's accepted into colleges. He's trying to decide where to go. And they said, you know, it's a fractured system, even for someone who can make sense of it, which is not easy, and has the money to pay, which not everyone does. So even a situation like that, I think people often say, well, it's because they don't have insurance or they can't afford it. Now, this is the situation for everyone in this state.
Our guest is Anne Marie Timmons of the new New Hampshire Bulletin, newhampshirebulletin.com. We'll take a quick break. We have a few minutes left here on this edition of Feldes and Kale, and be right back on 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, Feldes and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Marie Timmons with us, longtime Concord Monitor reporter, now with New Hampshire Bulletin.com. And we mentioned the mask mandate. It no longer applies here in the Granite State. So I know you did a piece on that. Anne Marie, what does it all mean that there is no more mask mandate?
There is no more mask mandate unless you live in a community, city or town, that has a mask mandate, like Concord, where I live, Dover, or Durham, rather, for example, Nashua. That mask mandate remains. You very well may go into stores that require that you wear masks while you're in there. The complication is, how do you know where you are, at what time, what you have to do, especially if you're in a community that does require it? So the rule is so confusing that when I wrote about this last week, I had a business owner email me and say, "You're wrong. We still have to have masks, even if you live in a non-mask community. That's just the rules." And so I shared with them the information from the governor's announcement, and they said, "Well, press conference changes nothing. You're wrong." And I think there's some confusion about this.
Yeah.
So you don't have to wear a mask if you're out and about in a community, as I said, that doesn't require it. You may have to in a store. I was at Jordan's Ice Cream over the weekend in Belmont, not a mask mandate community. And there was a real mix. I would say most people had their mask on, but it's a mix now. So it is different. One thing I heard from business owners is some really liked that we had the mask mandate, because then it wasn't them telling the customer that they didn't want them to wear a mask. They could say, "Well, the state says you have to wear a mask, so I can't do anything. You have to." And it was sort of a cover. So I have heard some businesses say that is sort of, that makes it a little harder for them to feel that they can enforce the mask mandate.
Well, Amory, cases and hospitalizations are going up substantially right now here in New Hampshire. And on November 19th, when Governor Sununu instituted the mask mandate, he justified it based on hospitalizations going up. So what is his justification of getting rid of the mask mandate? We all know that masks help reduce healthcare costs, help keep our schools open, help keep our economy open. What's his justification to get rid of masks?
His explanation, when we asked him that quite a lot at the press conference, because we knew that we are hearing the same thing from readers and people in the community. Numbers aren't really any lower than they were in November 2020 when this mask mandate was put in place. His feeling is that the vaccinations are here now. They were not here then. And that the state, he feels, is moving along at quite a good pace at getting folks vaccinated. I think we're, on average, 25% of the state is fully vaccinated. That differs depending on which county you're in. Up north, they're above that, near Rockingham and whatnot. It's a little lower, or the Hillsborough County lower. So his feeling is that the mask mandate is here. He very much emphasized that he wants you to keep wearing a mask. He doesn't think it's time to stop wearing a mask, but that the vaccination was a game changer in on that question. And that was his explanation.
Anne Marie Timmons, we wish you all the best in your new pursuit with New Hampshire Bulletin.com. You can log on right now and read some great articles, great in-depth articles about a lot of various topics. And Anne Marie, we hope to have you back.
Oh, I would be glad to. Please visit us. I didn't give a shout out to my great colleagues, if I could.
Sure.
We have a couple people from the Monitor. Myself, Dana Wormolt, who is the editorial editor at the Monitor. He's our editor. Ethan DeWitt, the legislative reporter, is with us. And Amanda Gokey, who is wonderful writer in Vermont, was at the Vermont Digger doing work for them. She's joining us as well. We also run commentary and op-eds, so definitely welcome those. You can always find us, our address, our contact information at NewHampshireBulletin.com. We're working on office space downtown Concord.
Oh, nice.
We'll be there soon. So I'd love to come back. Love to. Anyone has any questions, please reach out to me on Twitter or on our homepage. Either way. So thank you.
Anne Marie, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
We'll talk
Have a
soon.
Good day.
And that'll do it for another edition of Feldis and Kale here on 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers.